a lot of young aspiring filmmakers or young filmmakers try to do something like this, and they don't realize what goes into something like this, like the whole human connection idea. You have to kind of delve into each of these characters because it has to be interesting for an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending.
75 minutes. You just got to cross that indie threshold.
Hi, and welcome to Episode Cine Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Ben Gertz.
And I'm Thomas Horton.
And we've actually set a record of actually doing a second episode pretty soon after the first one.
Boom.
It's great. So we didn't kind of talk about it in the first episode back, but we kind of mentioned it. We had a long hiatus, about a year long hiatus, and we wanted to kind of come back. We kind of wanted to revamp the show, and I kind of talked with Ben and Thomas and a couple of other people from our podcast, and the idea was to kind of create this new format that we currently have, and the whole idea is just to pitch Ben movies is what it sounds like.
Well, let's not lose all our listeners right now. There's more to the format than just that, but it's a little more structured.
We're trying to be a little more structure with this version of Cine Nation, you could say, and we're doing a little more research with each episode, and we're also making the big change. We're trying to make it a bi-weekly podcast. We were trying to do a week-by-week thing, and that was just too crazy. So you're going to get, like, basically two of these a month, and then hopefully in the future we can actually do, like, shorter episodes that focus on more kind of current affairs, like current topics or whatever. And we'll
just
have more
people in Hollywood who are having affairs with each other. That's all we're going to cover.
That's all we're going to talk about. It's just current, yeah, gossip, current affairs in Hollywood. But yeah, so we'll talk about like some of the shows we're watching or movies. That'll just be kind of a free for all or whatever. But with these new episodes, we're kind of going to like take a topic, spend the first half or more of the show, like kind of analyzing it and trying to relate it to today's film world if we can, but also just break down the films or sometimes TV shows that kind of fit under that umbrella. And
what's our theme today?
So our theme today, another one that was pitched by Thomas actually, was 24-hour movies. But first, we gotta follow up on our Christmas episode. That's the big thing. We gotta follow up on the Christmas episode. So Thomas,
mm-hmm.
What did you do after we recorded the Christmas episode? What's something you watched?
Are you referring to the Princess Switch on Netflix?
I'm referring to the Princess Switch on Netflix.
Yeah, so Netflix dropped, right after we recorded our new episode, Netflix dropped a new Christmas movie, which they're doing several this Christmas season.
Holiday season,
they're doing the Santa Claus Chronicles or whatever.
Christmas Chronicles
with Kurt Russell as a sexy Santa Claus.
I've watched that with the kids.
Oh yeah, was it as sexy as it looks?
I wasn't actually there, you know, present for every moment. By that I mean I just walked in and I was like, "What in the world is this trash?"
I watched it with the kids. No, I didn't.
Yeah,
and also the Christmas Prince 2, which just dropped this week, and I haven't had a chance to check that one out yet. Also, since I haven't seen the first
sequel to the one that just came out not that long ago,
last year, Christmas, yeah.
Oh, last Christmas.
Christmas. No, is it Christmas Prince Royal Wedding or whatever? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah,
they have to get remarried.
Yeah, well, they didn't get married in the first one, so
yeah, I didn't see the first one, so that, I feel like I need to catch up because I might.
Well,
out.
You've seen the ending of the first one because it's in Princess Switch. Wait. Like, that's the whole bit. I don't know if you caught that, but I also watched this.
Wait, so they take place
so wait,
in the
they're
same
building like a
universe?
Princess universe? Yeah.
Like, no. It's meta. What they do, what they're doing is, it's what, so at one point, Vanessa Hudgens, well, one of her characters, okay, premise of the, or the, basically what Princess Switch is it's Prince and the Popper, but it's a princess and Vanessa Hudgens, who is, well, she's both of them, but
she
her
has the, the best secret kept, this, be,
oh yeah,
best kept secret bakery in Chicago.
In Chicago, yeah, yeah. So there's a part where the princess, who's now playing the Chicago baker, she's watching Netflix with a guy she's interested in, like the other baker, and they watch Christmas Prince. That's what they do.
They're literally Netflix and chilling in a Netflix show?
Yes, they're literally Netflix and chilling in a Netflix movie.
I was hoping we were building out this like weird Eastern European shared universe with all these like vaguely European kingdoms that they're... Well, this one was Belgravia, right?
Belgravia, yeah.
Belgravia?
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody is... speaks it with like British accents.
Yeah.
But they all have Italian last names. I don't know if you noticed that. But everyone who works in the castle has an Italian last name.
And you're just like, well, okay.
But they're living in like the mountains of some Eastern European country.
It's like, oh, we're
I feel
Italian.
Like we could pitch this cinematic universe to Netflix. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
they're
already doing like a Johnny Appleseed Tall Tales universe. Like that's happening.
Well, I mean, one of the things. So when the baker becomes the princess for a little while, she like immediately takes an interest in foreign policy. And so I think we could definitely bring in all these princesses and have them like tackle some kind of world crisis.
I think it's
Justice
possible.
League, but for princesses.
Well, for princesses in the Netflix Christmas universe.
Christmas princesses.
There is a possible Christmas tragedy on the horizon, and they have to solve this crisis. Like that's what's going to happen. And you know what? They'd be totally down with it. I feel like it'd be great. But yeah, it's a movie where like even when you're watching it, you're kind of like, none of this makes sense to me. Like, but we just kept watching it.
Yeah, they really just switch places on a whim, and I'm not really sure why they switch. The princess is the one who wants to switch places, but they're not really sure why. And then they both have like, the princess is getting married in 2 days, and the baker has like the biggest competition of her career in 2 days, and they're like, it'll be fine. We'll just switch places, and nothing bad will happen.
She never preps for the bakery competition. Never. It made
yes,
no sense.
Yes, because she threw out her schedule. That's the spirit of Christmas. You're not supposed to have a schedule.
I love how there's one word in the entire movie they switch so that Vanessa Hudgens can say in a different accent, and it's schedule. They will say schedule 5 different times in a conversation, but it's schedule if it's the Belgravian person or whatever.
Yeah.
And then schedule if they're American. It's
right,
like,
you have to have a clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the clue. Schedule. And you hear it so much.
I love to drop that now, by the way, just from the few like interactions I had with, you know, good friends in the UK, they would say schedule. And I say that now and people just endlessly roll their eyes like, what sort of ass would say this? I'm like, are you referring to your schedule?
Your schedule?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
that's
fit
the word
right
they
in
use.
Belgravia, Ben.
And Belgravia.
You know, if I could find me a good Christmas princess, that would be fine. That's the goal of these things, right? They're like, they're sort of like dating profiles, but like...
And see, I love that I watched it on my roommate's Netflix. Like, it's in our living room, so like, they'll come to it.
I'm getting all the recommended Christmas stuff now. It's terrible.
So yeah, I looked after we talked about this stuff. Netflix had, let's see, the recommended percentage or whatever, likelihood I would like it, was like 89% for one of them and 92% for the other. I don't remember which was which, but I was like, now I can't watch it because they think I should watch it, and I'm not going to fall for their algorithm. Like, even though I am curious, I'd love to watch this movie.
These are lies. But yeah, it was one where like we started our movie night as our second movie, and we're like, let's just watch a few minutes of it, and then we just finish the full thing.
Yeah, you gotta find out what happens.
Yeah, sure, that's what we had to do. But it was just more like we were so confused by it all.
It's like she and the prince hate each other so much when they first meet. How are they ever going to fall in love?
Well, he almost hits her with his Mercedes. Well, not him, but his driver.
Yeah.
And I love, Ben, you're like totally lost in what we're talking about with the story.
Sure.
But
as some of our listeners might be who haven't watched like one of the most popular films on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's a movie designed for you literally to be doing Christmas presents or like putting lights in the tree, because it's one where you just literally walk away, come back, and you're like, oh, I kind of have an idea what's going on.
What Brandon's saying is it's a movie that's designed for you to just listen to it and not actually be looking at it because it looks terrible.
It's weirdly shot. It really is. Anyway, enough about The Princess Switch. Find out for yourself on Netflix. We're not sponsored by them, but go watch it.
Yes.
yes. So yeah, our topic for today is 24-hour movies. So movies that take place in a day or less. Thomas, I'm going to ask you, why did you want to do this topic? Because you pitched it.
I don't know. When we started talking about kind of like delving into subgenres, and especially with the research you did for the Christmas episode, Brandon, I was like, oh, what are some genres that I've... some like very specific genres I've always found really interesting. And that one came up because there's so many movies that I love that are set this way. And I feel like it's really interesting because I almost feel like of all the movies that I love that are 24-hour movies, there's like two different paces. They're either like hangout movies, like Richard Linklater, or they're like insanely breathless, this is all taking place in a couple of hours, like Run Lola Run kind of boom, 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 boom. And I think it's so interesting that you can consider this like a subgenre and just have the movies be on the completely opposite end of the spectrum as far as like pacing is concerned, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, they're both like they're hangout movies, because I kind of saw it, so I kind of wrote down, because I started doing a little research and watching some stuff, and there were kind of like three main types of films like this, and it was, or within the 24-hour genre or types of stories, and it was, I call it The Brief Encounter, which is kind of the Before Sunrise, Sunset, that trilogy where it's like you have a moment, they meet, and the rest of the movie is just them like for the day spending time together and finding out one another, and it's based on conversations. A Day in a Life is the other one, and that's kind of the hangout movie, like Dazed and Confused or like Slacker or things like that. And then there's The Ticking Time Bomb, which is more of the action thriller where like something is happening and that's your end point. So it's like, what was one that I saw? Let's see. I'm going through my list of stuff.
Which we're going to make, I think we can make this list public, right? Like for listeners who want to follow on. We've got a Letterboxd list of films that you can comment on
tell us stuff to add. There was, let's see.
I mean like Pelham 1-2-3, I think, are definitely.
Tiger Pelham 1-2-3 or Crank. Crank is a big one where it's like, where literally it's just like, if he doesn't keep his adrenaline up, he's going to die. Or it's the, even Before Sunset, which is, you have the kind of brief encounter, but the end of before, or the whole thing of Before Sunset is that Ethan Hawke has a plane to get on within an hour and a half. And so the rest of the time is that it's this kind of thing that's in the background that you know is going to end this moment. Or in Run, Lola, Run, it actually starts off with a ticking clock at the beginning of Run, Lola, Run. Is that she has 20 minutes to get money to her boyfriend before he gets killed by these mob guys. So you always have something kind of going on that's pushing the story forward. But there's also other things that are happening as well besides just those three topics. And so a lot of it, because I started delving into... the guy who's probably done it the most is Richard Linklater with the Before Sunrise, Sunset, Dazed and Confused, Slacker. Is there some other ones that...
Everybody Wants Some is one day too, right?
I think it's 3 days. That's a weekend.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
It's like the last weekend in college. But Linklater is like very known for... making movies like that are in, say, a day or a short amount of time,
or 12 years.
But you're only seeing a few days in those 12 years.
Let's not forget that he's been on every end of the spectrum.
But anyway, so like, let's talk about a little bit like kind of rules of these films we're going to talk about. So there's kind of a difference, because we'll probably come back to this one in a bit, but like one location movies, and 24 hours or less movies. Like, it's, for example, Locke with Tom Hardy is a 24 hours or less, but it's also, like, set in a car.
Yeah.
And so we'll do probably a separate episode of that.
Or Rope.
Hitchcock. Rope is one.
Know, just, they go in several different rooms, but, you know, it's all one set for sure. Yeah.
But the big thing I was going to ask is, can you do a 24-hour movie with a lot of flashbacks? Because some movies that people include, like Reservoir Dogs, has a good bit of flashbacks in it within the film.
I don't know. I think my response was, I think you're getting kind of into murky territory there, because it's like any like Christmas Carol movie, if you start bringing all that in, there's you know, the, if anytime you're talking about like a framing device, then you're like, okay, well, like the framing device is 24 hours, but all this other stuff breaks outside of that.
Yeah.
So I think right. If you really want to kind of get to the heart of the genre, you have to kind of eliminate the excessive flashbacks for sure.
Yeah. I thought Reservoir Dogs has a good bit of flashbacks in it. Like, you flashback to Keitel.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about, like, when he, before he gets the job, you flashback to Tim Roth finding out he's the, spoiler alert, he's the, like, the spot, or the undercover cop. But yeah, so anyway, so what's kind of some 24-hour movies that come to mind for you guys that you want to talk about?
Well, the films I love. I mean, the first thing that came to mind when we talked about the genre was, like, Before Sunset, Before Sunrise. You know, sort of like Walk and Talk, like it's very fixated on the fact, it's like it's flaunting the format or the genre as like a constraint, you know what I mean? That's what I thought of. And then of course you do have the more of the action movie type thing, like Collateral, Die Hard or something, where you don't think about it, it's not about the fact that it's limited to 24 hours at all. You know, Air Force One, it's a byproduct when you think about it afterwards. You know what I mean? But yeah, I guess I initially, you know, I'm curious. Yeah, I mean, you guys have seen more Linklater than I have. Like, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, that to me seems like the most, like, it's hanging its hat on the time constraints of it all. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's, yeah, it's the whole plot is like with Sunrise, it's a brief encounter where they're connecting with this one day and they're finding out one another. And then Before Sunset is the reconnecting of it, of what they had before.
And then Before Midnight is
They're married in Before Midnight.
Not to each other.
No, they're married to each other. They're married to each other in Before Midnight. Ben's currently shaking his Ben's currently shaking his head. It's my least favorite of the three. I still do like it, but it's my least favorite. My favorite Before Sunset. But yeah, those are kind of the, and the thing is with Linklater, with that, with those especially, those are kind of, I guess he's trying to do French New Wave type films. So there's one of the movies I watched to prep for this was a French New Wave film called Cleo from 5 to 7. And it's basically about this character who, she's a famous singer in Paris, or up-and-coming singer, and she finds out, she did a test and she might have cancer. So it's just spending like 2 hours, two and a half hours of her day where she's supposed to call the doctor and find out if she has cancer or not. And so you're just kind of seeing her kind of float through Paris and interact with people with this hanging thing of, does she have cancer or not? Is she about to die? All that stuff. And it was directed by Agnès Varda. But Cleo, her character, at the end of it, or in the last like 25 minutes or so, she meets a soldier who's about to deploy and go somewhere. And that, those last 25 minutes are basically Before Sunrise.
That's interesting.
Because she's now kind of forgotten all about, it's still there, but they're just kind of connecting. And there's even similar scenes between that movie and Before Sunrise. And so Linklater is taking stuff from those type of, like Varda or Godard and Truffaut, and kind of putting it in a more, I wouldn't say American context, but American filmmaker context, if that makes sense. Like, it's from the American filmmaker perspective. And so a lot of his films, like Before Sunrise, and even to an extent maybe Dazed and Confused, is kind of influenced by that movement of filmmakers in France in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Because I started looking more into it and kind of how they use time and how Linklater uses like the short amount of time in their films. Like, a lot of French New Wave films are kind of just like brief moments in time, a day in the life or a few days in the life of these certain characters.
Well, I think we should include that Linklater video in the show notes that we watched, that Sight and Sound summary. Yeah. You know, basically interviewing Linklater and talking about how he plays with time in all of his films. You know, because you've got Boyhood on the other end, right, where it's intentionally along, you know, showing great lapses of time.
Mm-hmm. But only brief moments in those. That's the thing, is it's really only brief moments in the a full year or whatever.
Right.
Thomas, the ones that you kind of like, is it still in the Linklater vein, or are there other ones?
Well, another one, and it's funny, and this is what I'm really looking forward to in this new kind of format we're pursuing, is once you start thinking about these subgenres, you kind of start seeing these patterns of other things that you like. Because something I never even thought about was, and I don't have a name for it necessarily, but it's these comedy films. Because you were just saying a lot of the Linklater stuff is like Day in the Life. And if you take that idea of like a day in the life and then just see like how much can we throw off this person's life in one night in one day.
Yeah.
Like how crazy can things get? And once I kind of started thinking about that approach, like so many comedies that I love just started coming to mind. Like Superbad, all the Friday movies are kind of centered around that. Like, you know, it's this day we're just going to sit on the front porch and do nothing, and then it just gets crazier and crazier. We've got a bunch of other stuff on the list.
I'm looking at like Superbad. Other examples are like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, where it's like, it's almost like a party there's a lot of these teenage kind of comedy films where it centers on a party that's being had that night.
But not necessarily like, because I think some of those kind of fall more into the hangout movies, like Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah.
I would call more of a hangout movie, but something like, like Clerks is kind of like, this is a day in the life, but it's going very, very, it's not going according to plan, and it's going to continue getting stranger and stranger. And I mean, that approach, I think, can translate into some of the action films too, that we like Collateral, I think, is like really dark version of that. You know, Collateral easily could have been, depending on who got into his cab that night, it easily could have been, you know, a crazy comedy.
Yeah.
If he hadn't picked up Tom Cruise. But that one's really interesting, I think. I hadn't seen After Hours until like last year when you recommended it to me. But I think that's a huge one to kind of look at with Scorsese early on in that movie. Even though it's a comedy, the pacing is just breathless, and you find it, even though you're having a good time watching it, you find it stressing you out, because it's just so, it never lets up. You're just going with this guy, and he's so
Ben,
tired.
Have you seen After Hours, Ben?
No, I haven't, but I'm looking at the Letterboxd page now. It looks super interesting.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what After Hours is, basically it's this character, and he is a, Griffin Dunne, and he works at like just kind of a regular office job, and he goes out to I think he's going out one night, and he meets a girl, and basically it's just a simple, like, it's gonna be a hookup. And what happens is that, this is when cell phones and things of that nature just, you didn't have, but it's like he basically just kind of gets lost in New York City, and he's just trying to get home. It's almost like it's like Odyssey in New York for like a night, and just like stuff just starts happening, and it's a free fall in a way of where like he gets accused of a crime, or he's trying to find the keys to this guy's car so he can, like, drive it home. It's like, it's all just like everything starts adding up, and all he wants to do is go home and go to sleep. And he just can't do that. Something is always getting in his way and preventing him from that. And it's interesting seeing, especially a filmmaker like Scorsese, tackle something that's kind of fairly simple and how to make it really cinematic and interesting. And like you said, like what Thomas said, it just never lets up. It's just constantly just...
Yeah, it's really breathless. And I mean, for a comedy, and I think some other films have managed to capture that, like... I think Superbad, I wouldn't necessarily call it breathless, but it does kind of capture that, like, things just keep escalating and escalating. And I think it's kind of rare for comedies to have that kind of urgency to them. And, I can always appreciate it when somebody pulls it off well.
Yeah, another movie, right? Like, it's a mad world. Isn't that 24 hours? Basically, you've got the whole premise of, like, you know, this guy's got this secret that he's racing to, and then they all are racing there as well. Yeah, it adds like this urgency to the comedy that you don't have in just sort of like an Owen Wilson buddy film, you know?
Yeah. And then another one, this is not like comedy, but I want to talk about sense of urgency. And it's kind of also goes into in line with a ticking time bomb, is a little bit farther back, but it's High Noon with the Western type genre. And how they use a 24-hour in a day. So with High Noon, it's Gary Cooper's a sheriff, and he finds out that these characters that he put in jail have gotten out, and they're coming back to town. And he's asking the entire... And they're going to meet in the square at noon. And so they're going to attack the town, and he basically is trying to get the rest of the town to get on board with him, and no one will help him. And so is the entire time is building up to, will someone help him, and will this be a bloodbath by the end at High Noon? And so that's kind of where the tension's happening. And it kind of, it's like it's always in the back of your mind that something's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen if no one helps this man. But yeah, other ones that we're looking at with the party type aspect, not party, but like, there's also bad movies that follow this type stuff as well. Like, there's a few of these in here that are not on our list that are not that good.
Sure.
There's a couple. Like, Dude, Where's My Car? Dude, Where's My Car is not a good movie.
No.
I'm sorry if you love it, but it is not a good movie. But it follows this, like, 24 hours in a day where it's like they have to find something. And...
Well, I think it kind of takes that, what I was saying that I really enjoy in a comedy, and just elevates it so high that it's like eye roll worthy, like Aliens.
Yeah.
Aliens and stuff. You know, I don't always appreciate reality in my comedy, but kind of in that sub, and like, that's the thing I love about Superbad when it came out that like blew me away. Cause it was so, it felt so realistic. Like anybody I knew as a teenager could have fallen into that storyline. And you know, Ashton Kutcher and Sean William Scott, you know, finding out their cars. I don't exactly remember. There was like a portal and the aliens had it and something. I just remember there were aliens.
Actually, the car is just the
it's a MacGuffin.
I watched this. It's a MacGuffin. That's what motivates them.
But something else. Isn't there a Rubik's Cube or something was a portal?
It's a Rubik's Cube. Yeah. That once Sean William Scott solves the Rubik's Cube, it creates a timer where, like, if a timer goes off, it ends the world, ends the universe or whatever. And so it's I don't know if it's a portal or it's just it's something. I don't even know what it was. There was multiple aliens in this movie. Like, it just didn't make any sense.
So let me ask you,
we got to write one of these movies. Let's do a sequel.
Let me pose this to you guys. So we've talked about like how crazy a day can get as a comedy subgenre of this. And we've talked about a hangout movie. What would you say Ferris Bueller falls under?
I feel like that's still a hangout movie more.
Yeah.
I would say it's a hangout movie.
I agree.
Because Ferris Bueller, I need to put that in the list.
I think it's on the list.
It's on the list.
Yeah. Is it? Okay. Oh, yeah, it is. Okay. It's more, it's a hangout movie, because like not much, like there's stuff happens in it, but there's no like tension or like major conflict until kind of the very end. Mm-hmm. that Ferris is aware of.
Yeah.
Like there's always the principal who or vice principal who's trying to catch him, but he's not really aware of that. The conflict doesn't come in until he's trying to beat his dad home. Like that's really the only conflict in that film, except just the few little things of him like trying to get to that place or that place.
Do you know what movie we're missing? This is its own micro genre. What about that Woody Harrelson movie that he did that was like live? Do you remember this? He did like a live movie in London or something where he jumps off the bridge or something like this. It like live stream into theaters.
Did you watch this, Ben?
No, I haven't watched this, but I just saw there was he was trying to promote it. Sorry, I started thinking about how like Russian Ark is on our list.
Yes.
And you actually, you know, you kind of have this like, those are, you have like a sort of theater angle of this, mm-hmm. right? Of like films that are basically that they're 24 hours because they're performed, you know, live-ish. I mean, obviously the narrative can be different and it's not just one thing. But yeah, the Woody Harrelson thing came to mind. I don't know of any other examples like that. I mean, he was touting it in the promotion. It's like, this has never been done. And if it doesn't work, I'm just going to jump in the river and it'll still be fun.
I mean, are we here to talk about Lost in London, or are we really here to talk about Havoc? I think we should keep the topic on Havoc. That's a rad joke for you, Brandon. Just
yeah, I know. Oh yeah. Okay, I know what you're talking. It's the AMA that he did.
Yeah, when he wouldn't answer questions about any of his other movies except Havoc.
But Havoc.
Well, I think something Ben picked up on a minute ago was that we had some kind of theater related stuff in here, which I think is something else, and we kind of came up when we started debating this genre and, you know, the stuff between one set and one location, because it does kind of lend itself to a, you know, a stage play feeling for some of these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like, I mean, someone didn't put in the play or put in our list but it's like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is, I think, all in one set. All in the house or whatever. And
yeah, it's on the list.
Yeah, it's on the list, but like that's a very like play. Like it's based on a play. It's very theatrical.
Yeah, it's a Nichols film.
And then there's a few others on here though. Or like even Breakfast Club, for example. That's like, it fits in everything we're talking about, but it's pretty much just one location. I mean, it's not one room, but it's like one setting. It's at the school.
Hateful Eight. I remember seeing Hateful Eight and coming out, and because, you know, the whole thing for a while was that Tarantino wasn't going to actually make Hateful Eight. He was just going to do like that live reading of it.
Yeah.
And after we saw it, I was like, that it could have existed only as a performed piece. You know, it didn't. You didn't. I enjoyed seeing it on film, but you didn't necessarily. It would have been just, you wouldn't have lost anything seeing it in a theater.
Yeah. And it might have been more interesting as a stage play, in a way. Like, it could have been a more interesting story as a stage play. But yeah, it's these very kind of theatrical-type films that are very contained.
Sleuth? Did you ever see Sleuth, Michael Caine?
I saw the remake.
Jude Law?
With Jude Law, directed by Kenneth Branagh. You're just like, that's it, I'm gonna end it there.
No, I saw that one too.
So is that all in one day, or is that, I know it's basically all in one location.
It's just the guy coming to visit.
Okay.
In like one night.
Yeah, when you have a lot of these films, so I'm gonna look at like when you look at a lot of these lists, it's very, a lot of 24-hour movies nowadays, and pretty much since Linklater, and a little bit in the 80s, is that they're usually, not always, but kind of either low budget films or big action films. It's kind of one or the other. And with a lot of the low budget films, a good bit of them deal with like teens or mid 20s. So you're getting the Breakfast Club, you're getting the Clerks, you're getting even Empire Records. these kind of young adult type stories in a way.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense, because when I think about this genre, kind of the two things I take away that I think are really strong, the two aspects of a film or of a script that come out really strongly in this subgenre are human relationships, the ability to see a human relationship evolve over real time, which I think is what Linklater is so good at and what a lot of these Hangout movies are about. And then pacing, the ability to really create just pounding pace. And so I think that's like you said, that's either, you know, indie dramas or indie comedies and big action films. I think that's what those two things lend themselves to the most.
Yeah. And when done wrong, it just really, it doesn't work. And it, and this is the type, the 24 hour thing, I feel like is a lot of young aspiring filmmakers or young filmmakers try to do something like this. And they don't realize what goes into something like this, like the whole human connection idea. It's not always just hanging out and having a party. You have to kind of delve into each of these characters, because it has to be interesting for an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending.
75 minutes. You just got to cross that indie threshold.
75 minutes, is that the threshold?
There's like a typically a minimum, you know, to be considered a feature, right? Isn't it ballpark?
At one point it was like 45 minutes I saw, like on like a festival like submission thing.
Well, yeah, they have to make room for local submissions, you know what I mean?
That couldn't reach that full hour. But yeah, so you with a lot of these, you have these hangout stuff or it's action, and there's not a lot nowadays. Like you don't see a lot of these type movies every year, because again, it's a subgenre. But it's I feel like its peak was probably in the 90s, in that era. And you've had other movies, even back, I think His Girl Friday, which is in the 1930s, is also a one-day thing, I believe. So like, it's kind of gone back all the way to the 30s in that era where things can take place in a day. And as long as you have a kind of, there has to be some sort of thing that makes it that one day. Like something, if it's so much of as like, with Clerks, he wasn't supposed to work that day or whatever. It's something has to, at the very beginning, make it a little unusual to where you're looking at this specific day.
There's got to be some motivation behind it, or else it all falls apart.
Yeah. And that's what people kind of lack in, say, indie filmmakers, where it's like, even before Sunrise, like there's that, where it's just the meeting of them together. Or Dazed and Confused, it's the last day of school. Oh, it's the last day of school. Right. Beginning of the summer. Like, there has to be at least something there, and then you add everything in else later. Because the ending of that thing might not matter at all. It might not, like, you're not talking, not every conversation is not about the end of school and the beginning of the summer and the next year. It's about just that kind of prompts them to have the conversations they're going to have that day.
Yeah. Even something like waiting, where it's the one character's first day, and even though that's not a big deal to any of the other characters, it's still the kind of jumping off point for everything that's happening.
Yeah.
And our reason for watching these characters.
Exactly. The audience needs to know, why am I watching this specific day? Why is this an important day? And it could be something just very, very small. And it could just be a hangout movie. Ferris Bueller is, hey, I'm just going to skip school today, and that's the thing that kind of prompts everything in that story.
But I feel like with Ferris Bueller, too, the idea is that everything that all of Ferris's hijinks have built to a head on this day. It's not just that he's skipping school, it's that everyone around him, including his best friend, are finally fed up with
him doing
the
this.
Way that he acts.
Yeah. That's a good point. So when you're making your 24-hour movie, make sure you have that moment, or that you have that event that's occurring that prompts the entire story. If it's like Breakfast Club, it's just a Saturday it's a Saturday school session, the tension basically. Or it's High Noon, or it's even 25th Hour is an example with Spike Lee, where it's Edward Norton who he's about to go to jail the next day. And so it's his last day before he goes in the prison after all the stuff he's done. So you need to have that event occurring. So yeah, I think, do we miss anything on our list of how to break down the 24-hour movie?
I think we covered a lot of bases.
Yeah, there was one part I want to bring up, and just kind of a little bit of like a tangent with this topic. There was a movie I watched recently from this research, which was called 10 Items or Less. And it's Morgan Freeman and Paz Vega, and it kind of follows the brief encounter trope of this genre. And basically, Morgan Freeman is an older actor who's thinking about possibly doing a comeback. He's been gone from the movies for 4 years, and he's looking at taking this small indie role as a manager of a grocery store. And so he goes to this grocery store in, like, Carson in California to research the role, and he meets Paz Vega, who is this checkout girl at the 10 Items or Less lane in the grocery store. And the entire movie is about them kind of connecting and finding out and kind of learning from one another. And why I bring it up is because it was actually the first movie to be released digitally online while it was still in theaters. And it was 06 or 07. And what I find interesting is that movie that was the first digitally online, you can't find it anywhere online to stream or purchase. Like, you can only buy the DVD of it. You can't find it anywhere else. It's actually a really good movie. And for a film that was so kind of a landmark in a way for, like, because it's before streaming became a big deal, and it was the first one, and now no one can find it to watch unless you're like, you own it on DVD, or you have a video rental store in your community, or a library maybe. But it's just weird that one of these movies like that, which is kind of like, these movies I think are now like very streamable, like you can finally get access to a lot of these indie films that follow that kind, this kind of trope. And that's just when I found weird that it's not available anywhere online when it was the first streaming film, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Just a weird, as a tangent, but wanted to bring it up.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's anytime somebody asks me why I have, you know, a DVD shelf at home, I mean, that's my fear, is that with all of this stuff going digital, at some point, something's just going to slip through the cracks. And when you decide you do want to see it, it's, you know, the contract they had with Netflix is up, and then it's just gone.
Yeah. Like Just Friends. We can't watch that on Netflix right now.
Good thing I have that on DVD.
Yeah, so do I. But it's like, another way I want to bring up, because I was when I was talking about, thinking about pitching, but I'm not going to pitch this one. But it's a movie called The Swimmer with Burt Lancaster. And basically, it's Burt Lancaster plays, it's in Connecticut. It's the last day of the summer. He winds up at this, like, at his, like, rich neighbor's pool. And what he's like, he's kind of, everyone's kind of a little, like, weirded out by him, but they're like, oh, you're back. You're back in town after all this time. And the whole premise of the story is that, oh, all he's in a rich neighborhood. Each one of these neighbors have a pool. So he's going to swim basically home. He's going to swim from pool to pool to get back home. And at every stop he makes, you start finding out more and more about his character and how the life that he thinks he has, that he's talking about, he actually doesn't have. So the wife he has isn't there. The house he has isn't there. And with each step, you're finding out more and more and revealing more about this character and kind of how he's denying everything that's happening in his life. And I bring it up because Frank Perry, the director, this one's available on Blu-ray, but a lot of his other films you can't find anywhere. Like, that, some of them didn't make the switch from VHS to DVD, but they're all kind of great films that he made, but you just can't find anywhere, or they're very hard to come by. So again, another one to kind of look at, or other films to look at that we just kind of, that can slip the cracks, that are really good films.
It's interesting, too, because we're entering a phase where the people who made these films and the people who were in them and the people who saw them are sort of like, you know, they're aging out of like the movie buying, right? And so you hit a point where how do you reintroduce one of these Frank Perry movies to anybody? You don't. Like, they're not gone exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, someone probably somewhere maybe still has the film print or whatever. But in all likelihood, like, there are just... Yeah, it's weird. I mean, this happens a lot more, honestly, in, like, software and games, right? Where, like, people think that, like, oh, yeah, you keep the disc for, you know, some game or Oregon Trail on floppy disk and you can just keep playing. It's like, not really. Like, there's really, like, a huge effort to try and archive some of these things because even though, like, we all played some game 15, 20 years ago, it's actually more or less dead. Like, you can't go back and play it. Films seem to have a longer shelf life. It's just interesting. It seems like we're hitting... Because there's definitely films from the 20s and 30s and all these things, right? Where it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course some of those are gone. Like, that seems reasonable. But then we talk about films from basically the 70s and we're like, well, wait a minute. Why can't we find that? And it's like, well, no, actually, this just happens through... you know, things atrophy, basically, kind of naturally.
Yeah, or like even 10 items or less was 10 years ago. And the only one, right. Like, if you look on Letterboxd, one of the top things is like, why is this so hard to find? You can't purchase it on iTunes to have. You can't purchase it on Amazon. You only can purchase it on physical media.
I'm just purely speculating, but I'm sure if it was, especially if it was the first like day and date pay-per-view release, the contracts were so crazy as to whoever was carrying it first would have streaming rights to it for and that whoever distributed it online first might be not even in business anymore.
They're not, because it was actually a company that Morgan Freeman started and it ended within like 2 years. But it was interesting because
his own damn fault.
He was too ahead of the curve is basically what it was, is that he came in too early because streaming didn't become a thing until like after he like the company disbanded. But like it's the editor was Michael Kahn, who's Spielberg's editor. Chivo or Emmanuel Lubezki was a camera operator on it.
What?
Alexander Payne's DP was the DP of it. Like, it's a very small indie film, but with so much great talent around it, and it's just hard to come by. But yeah, with the Frank Perry thing, Ben, it's like one of the films called Last Summer. We had at the video store in LA, Cinephile. We have a copy of it, but it's a transfer of a TV recording. Because the only available print is like in London and apparently not in good shape. So it's like the only way you can view it is like this certain way. So it's just like, and that was in, I think, late 60s, early 70s. And it's disappeared basically. And I found out about it because we're kind of going through, Edgar Wright has a list of his 1,000 favorite films. And he has a couple Frank Perry movies on there. And if you're not in a place that is like a video store like Cinephile or Videodrome in Atlanta, or there's places in Portland and Austin and other places around the country, then you can't view these things. But anyway, we don't want to go into a rant about streaming and lack of viewing. That's a whole different show. I think it's time to pitch movies to Ben.
I've got a movie to pitch real quick.
Okay.
Someone who needs to see a movie, then they've only got 24 hours and it's not streaming anywhere. He's got to get across town to his local video store to see if they have it.
I love this. They only have it on VHS. He can't find his VHS player. He
meets all kinds of weird people along the way. Boom.
VHS player. I'm like the oldest man in the room.
It's called a VCR, Ben.
I've heard of these.
That'd be a great hipster movie right there. I mean,
That'd be a great hipster short. You know what I mean? You could do a great 15 minutes.
He takes
of that.
The bus. Like, he just has to take the bus. Or he gets his bike.
His fixie bike has a flat tire.
He hops on a bird. They just got pulled from Portland, all the scooters.
Did they really?
Well, it was a trial, apparently, and then they're going to come back, maybe. But Anyway, for those aren't aware, so, you could rent and basically become like a death demon, you know, just like a
scooters.
Rogue.
No, there was deviant. Someone got arrested for a DUI here in LA on a bird.
Good.
Sure.
Yeah.
I will say this, they're a lot of fun after a couple beers.
don't we're gonna cut that, Chip.
That's fine. It should get cut.
No, I'm gonna leave it just for that. So anyway, let's pitch these two movies to Ben.
All right, as last week's winner, I like to let Brandon go first.
Oh,
damn!
So I see what I'm up against.
What a move!
Oh god. So this is a tough one because I was trying to pick for Ben, and Ben's a crapshoot. Like, you don't know what you're gonna get with him. So
you never know. He might pick. He might pick Four Christmases
over Just Friends. It makes no
sense. What a hype! Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm gonna pitch to you a movie. Came out in 1994. Probably can't stream it anywhere online. It's called The Paper, directed by Ron Howard. And it depicts a 24 hours in a day of a newspaper editor, his job. And basically what's happened is that at the beginning of the day, here's the cast. I'll pitch this to you. The cast stars Michael Keaton as the newspaper editor that you're following throughout the day. Glenn Close, who is his kind of head boss, like the managing editor who he has to answer to. And then Robert Duvall is their overall boss. Michael Keaton's married to Marissa Tomei. Randy Quaid is this kind of crazy columnist who's always being threatened by people because he's like doing investigative journalism and people are always wanting to kill him. And the paper's owned by...
So, wait, is the tone of this a comedy or is this
It's a comedy drama. Okay. Yeah, it's a comedy. This is pre-Spotlight. Pre-Spotlight.
Okay.
Jason Robards is the owner of the paper. Jason Alexander is one of the crazy guys who's trying to kill Randy Quaid. And then Catherine O'Hara is also in it. She's like the best friend of Marissa Tomei. So basically, it's following 24 hours of this newspaper in New York City. And the beginning of the day, a murder happens of these two businessmen. These two black kids are accused of it. And so the entire day is they're trying to do the story on these two kids. And Michael Keaton thinks that, this is very Spotlight-esque, Michael Keaton thinks that they're innocent, but everyone else is saying they're guilty. And so he tries to follow up all his leads because he doesn't want to print the wrong story about these kids. And he's also going through personal stuff where he's being recruited by a bigger paper in New York City and they want him to come there. Marissa Tomei wants him to take it because she's pregnant, about to have their baby. And
this is such a lighthearted just giggle of a
and
film.
It's 24 hours, but it's funny because it's Michael Keaton. Yeah. And like, 90s Michael Keaton. He hasn't done full-on drama yet. And it's 24 hours in the day following these newspaper writers and editors as they're trying to break this story. But you're seeing kind of all their personal struggles with Robert Duvall and his estranged daughter, Michael Keaton with his job interview and his pregnant wife and how he's spending too much time at work, and Randy Quaid just like doing a story on Jason Alexander and how he like doesn't pay for his parking tickets. Like, and directed by Ron Howard in his like kind of prime era right around Apollo 13.
Oh, there he goes. There he goes. Dropped a
yeah, you're really hooking me with that. Yeah. But this is a Ron Howard comedy? Okay.
Comedy drama.
Oh, God. You're really backing off this comedy thing the more I push on it.
Well, like, it's more of a drama, but there's comedy elements to it. It has an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I just pulled it up on Letterboxd, and the first review says something really great if you need a mood lifter. So
Ben.
That's pretty important for the Portland crowd.
Ben, I think this is for you.
Okay. I've heard your pitch.
Apparently not as good as Four Christmases. Okay, Thomas, your turn.
Okay, so I did have the idea late last night to pitch Free Fire starring Brie Larson, but that felt like cheating. So, but that is definitely worth checking out. It's on Amazon Prime. Charlton Copley, Armie Hammer. Great cast. 24-hour movie. One set, though, kind of. So maybe not.
Brie Larson.
Just a bunch of people shooting each other. So I'm going to pitch something that is not a comedy drama. And it's one of those that goes along with what I was saying, that I really love the films that kind of nail the breathless pacing. And it's called Good Time with Robert Pattinson. So it's about, and this is where it's a little fuzzy. I might have broken the rules here because it's not totally clear if this all happens in 24 hours, but most of it is definitely happening in 24 hours. But so Robert Pattinson has a brother who is mentally handicapped. He's played by Benny Safdie, who also like wrote, directed, and edited the movie with his brother, which is insane. He's also a very talented actor in this movie. But Robert Pattinson doesn't think his brother needs any kind of like clinical help, so he pulls him out of the clinical help that he's in and takes him with him to go rob a bank. The bank robbery does not go well, and the brother ends up getting arrested in the pursuing chase with police. So then the rest of the film, so Robert Pattinson finds a bail bondsman who guarantees that he can get his brother out of jail that night if he gets him $20,000 in bail. So the rest of the film follows Robert Pattinson in that night trying to get the money to break his brother out. He's dating Jennifer Jason Leigh. It's not really clear like what their relationship is or where it came from, but they're like dating and she's like an extremely spoiled heiress. And so he tries to get her to just pay for the bail, but then she can't. She gets cut off by her parents. So then he finds out that he can't even bail his brother out anyway because he got beat up in prison and he's in the hospital now. So he proceeds to go to the hospital and try and break his brother out. I won't delve too much into it because there's a lot of crazy stuff that goes on after that, but it involves trying to track down some stashed drugs that he can maybe sell to pay to get his brother out, and it's all crazy. Robert Pattinson is playing just this, the worst person, but so incredible to watch. It's one of those movies that just kind of grabs you and it never lets up, and the soundtrack is insane. It's just like pulsing constantly, just like pushing you towards the morning. And it's I don't know, it never feels like insanely over the top. There's definitely some times when you're like, oh, okay, this guy's the worst, but it's always engaging and it is definitely worth checking out, especially to see these two brothers. That this is their second feature, right?
Third.
They only did one. Third.
Yeah, these are third. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's so insanely well done. And it's just cool. It's cool, but it's also very stressful.
Yeah.
So when was this shot? What's the year?
Last year. Yeah.
Last year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Who DP'd? Anybody of note?
I don't know.
What's the style of what would you say the stylistically it looks like?
I mean, it's very like neon. It's pretty gritty. I feel like it's like a lot of like up in Robert Pattinson's face, and he's like super wide eyed, and he's got like bleached hair. Yeah. It looks nuts. There's a lot of like close ups and a lot of neon, and especially since it takes place at night.
Yeah.
It's just kind of focusing on these kind of like artificial lighting and all this stuff.
Very grainy and kind of guerrilla style of shooting, it feels like, in certain scenes.
All right, hold up. Full cast and crew. Let's see who DP'd this.
The Paper was shot by John Seal, who also shot Mad Max Fury Road. I'm just pointing that out.
Wow.
I'm not saying The Paper looks exactly like Mad Max Fury Road, but you get what I mean.
Good Time was shot by Sean Price Williams, who, let's see. I don't recognize any of these. He shot Marjorie Prime, which is supposed to be pretty good. Never saw it.
John, yeah, I don't know any. John Seal also shot Dead Poets Society.
Oof.
Uh-oh. I'm losing. Yeah. losing.
Now, here's a question. I can't verify this, and we only have one other potential reviewer who is your opponent, so this feels unfair, but Brandon, can you verify any potential rules violations of Thomas's pick of a 24-hour film?
I'm also in that thing. I can't remember if it goes over 24-hour mark.
I rewatched it to look for this, and they okay. So I mean, the chain of events are: the bank robbery happens, the brother gets arrested,
yeah,
the brother gets beat up in prison, and like the next thing you see, brother's arrested, brother's beat up in prison, and Robert Pattinson is like talking to the bail bondsman. So there's, by all means,
we're saying that any potential violation would only be a fractional amount of hours. It would not be.
It's not days.
Because the whole okay. point...
And it's not a flashback scenario.
No, no flashbacks.
The whole point is that Robert Pattinson knows that his brother is... I mean, he's mentally handicapped. He knows his brother is not meant to be in... He's on Rikers Island. Like, he knows his brother isn't meant to be there, and he's trying to get him out as soon as possible. So there, that sense of... Right. That 24-hour sense of urgency is there, whether or not they confirm that period. But the most important part is that it happens that night and that he post bail that night.
Yeah.
So
the only thing that there's the end, the very ending scene might be a few days later of the brother. Mm. Am I right? They're like when he's
yeah, the credit sequence. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. That
I am not. Let's go ahead and let's cut straight to the verdict. Because this is what clearly people have listened for this length of time to find out. I'm not going to disqualify you on a technicality. That seems petty. I am going to go with Brandon on this one, though. I haven't seen this Ron Howard film. I'm a Ron Howard fan. I'm re-entering a Ron Howard interest because of his work on the Mars series for National Geographic. It's like a documentary slash, you know, narrative blend hybrid is what he called it. And the cast, I gotta, you know, Brandon's bringing the heavyweights.
You know,
big cast.
When I
still don't understand the pitch of like it's comedy slash drama slash not funny, but it's hilarious. that worries me. And I do like the like if I could, you know, I like the kind of neon up close. You know, rushed, whatever, cinematography style. Like, I think I'd be into that, like, Traffic or something like that. But I think I gotta go with Brandon on this one.
I just gotta say, when I disqualified Free Fire for myself because it had Brie Larson in it, I did not, I wasn't thinking about Ron Howard with the paper, but... Now I'm thinking I should have stuck with
him. But let's be clear, you did not have to pull that shot. You can pick any film. You could have gone with Brie Larson. That would have been, dude, layups still count as points.
Noted for next time.
Oh yeah, yeah. That yeah. Mm. I shouldn't have won that one, but I'll take that win.
Oh my gosh. Don't question the verdict.
Well, I questioned it last week and it was wrong.
We've got a trend developing. Okay. Mutiny among the ranks.
I feel like the paper goes along with, and I'm not saying this because they're both news movies, but it goes along with like broadcast news that like everybody told me how hilarious it was. And the first time I watched it, I'm like, this is just Holly Hunter having like debilitating panic attacks.
Broadcast,
nothing funny.
Broadcast news is not funny. Like it's a good movie. It's not funny. Like it's not like, ha ha ha. But it's like, there might be funny moments. It's not a comedy. Anyway, but Ben, I hope you enjoy the paper at some point.
I didn't even say this point.
Thomas and I are tied 1-1. It's over.
Let me re-enter one more thing. Once again, just like last week, Brandon has picked a film that is hard to find, whereas my film is streaming on Amazon Prime for all Amazon Prime members.
You know why, though? It's because Brandon is pitching the movie store. Like, I have to fly to L.A., and come rent this
you
film
have a video,
24 hours and then like mail
you have
it back.
A video
yeah.
store in Portland, Ben. Like,
I know. I'll call him up on my dial tone phone, my landline, and see if they've got it.
VCR.
Yeah, cassette. There's definitely probably some VHS tapes of the paper somewhere.
Do you have any VCR tapes to put in my VHS player?
And also,
I'm not gonna live that down also, for a while.
The music was done by Randy Newman. I'm out. Let's do this.
Brandon, no. I regret this so bad now. You got a friend in me.
All right.
Oh my gosh.
Thomas and I are tied 1-1. So guys, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you give us a rating on iTunes. I can't wait to do episodes where Ben actually watches these movies and gives us a review of them.
It'll happen. And life is long. It's going to happen.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast. Make sure you give us a rating. Tell us what you feel about the show. If you disagree with Ben especially, be sure to send hate mail. We'll definitely read it on the episodes when we get them.
Yeah. Come at me on Twitter. Yeah.
So guys, Ben, Thomas, thank you guys for joining me again on this. And our listeners, thank you guys for listening. I hope you listen to more episodes soon. Bye.